What such a broadcast represents to an individual viewer can also change dramatically over time. When the word reception appeared in the last sentence of the wall text, it also conveyed this meaning, since it rubs shoulders both with exhibition and another word which cannot be adequately translated into English, memoir. In addition to memorial, this last word can mean human memory or hard drive. With it, Coleman challenged the notion that a computer is a storage system which preserves what we put on it. He also reminds us that our memories are as provisional as the digital images of the Last Supper. Finally, he expressed his hope that the viewers of the Louvre exhibition would do for his images what he did for Leonardo's, provide them with an ephemeral memorial. It is in the spirit of this hope and not as a documentation of Coleman's intervention that this talk is intended.
Okay, jump.
In so doing, the curators helped to clarify both why Leonardo privileged reception over creation and why he never really succumbed to the dream of a unique and autonomous self. They also provided an implicit critique of and an alternative to paternal transmission. Like the larger exhibition, the Madonna and Child in St. Anne brings together three generations of the same family. So now we're going to get a very different notion of generational relationality than that implied by this transmission of Verrocchio's knowledge to Leonardo and Leonardo's to his imitators. It does not bring together these three generations of the same family in order to secure power and privilege on one side of the gender divide. Indeed, it does not even acknowledge that there is one. Nor does it convene Mary, her mother, and Child in order to demonstrate the influence exercised by an earlier generation over a later one, or the triumph of innovation over precedent. The three generations in the painting are contemporary with each other. Not only do they appear in the same time and space, but St. Anne is only a little older than her daughter, and the Virgin Mary occupies the position simultaneously of a small child and a mother. Even more surprisingly, although each of the human figures in the painting constitutes a distinct person, none of them is an individual. The outstretched arms and spread legs of the child echo those of the mother, the position of the lamb, that of the child, and the Virgin Mary's lap, the lap on which she is sitting. The Madonna and St. Anne are also literally, as Freud points out in his famous reading of the painting, joined at the hip. And although Jesus is positioned at a distance from his mother, he remains connected to her, just as the lamb is to him. It is impossible to say whether he has just climbed down from her lap or is about to return to it, but this poses no crisis of interpretation, since each of these actions is so clearly the prelude to the other. As the Louvre exhibition made clear, Leonardo saw these kinds of family resemblances everywhere he looked. I say family resemblances because similarities signified ontological connectedness for Leonardo. If two things shared only one trait, they belonged to each other at the most profound level of their being. Each phenomenal form corresponded in this way with many others, and those with yet others. As a result of this vast latticework of resemblances, the world, according to Leonardo, was one single throbbing organism. Leonardo's mural is also ontologically unstable. It is constantly dying and being reborn in a slightly different guise, and its many variants relate to each other the same way the Madonna relates to St. Anne and her son. Through analogy, the same is true of every other form. We imagine ourselves to be sleeping in the same bed every night, having breakfast at the same table every morning, and looking at the same face in the mirror every time we comb our hair. But each of these things is constantly generating fresh variants of itself. Analogy not only bridges the distance between forms, it is also the means by which they perjure. Leonardo was not the first to take an interest in the comings and goings of the phenomenal world. Ovid pursues the thesis that, quote, another quote I love, every form takes visible shape as it wanders from one end of the metamorphoses to the other. Every form takes visible shape as it wanders. He pursues that thesis from one end of the metamorphoses to the other. However, it was not until analogy ceased to be perceived as a divine prerogative that it was possible to see this wandering as something other than a corruption or degradation. Few modern subjects have been willing to exercise this new capacity because it is so threatening to identity. If things are constantly falling into bits and pieces and being put back together in a slightly different way, then it must be true of human beings because the ego is first and foremost a bodily ego. Leonardo opened his ears to the lesson his age had to teach him because he saw that death is not the enemy of form, but rather what animates it. He also knew this to be as true of us as it is of the phenomenal world. All vital subjects are constantly emerging anew out of the ashes of their own extinction, the same but different. Coleman corresponded with this aspect of Leonardo's work, not only by constantly changing the images in his large screen projection, but also by using computation to absolutize the concepts of absence and presence. And this is, I've just got two paragraphs left, but there's kind of a big idea here, just so you pay attention. He used computation to absolutize the concepts of absence and presence. When the Louvre exhibition ended, most of Leonardo's work was removed from the walls of the museum, but it did not vanish. It was absent there, but present elsewhere, in a private collection, another museum, or even a vault in the Louvre. However, when the Louvre stopped showing the digital Last Supper, it ceased to exist. And this was also true of each image that made it up as soon as it left the screen. If we had been able to cut open the giant computer that was projecting and producing this digital Last Supper at any point during the exhibition, we would have been unable to locate anything that it permitted us to see. Because when a digital image disappears, it decays into the dust of numerical data. This data could, of course, be used to create a computationally identical image, but this image would still be new. The ever-changing numbers on the barcode at the bottom of each image in the large screen projection indicated how close the computer was to completing the next image. This process was live. It happened in real time before our very eyes. But the escalating numbers also helped us to see that until this image in the making was visible, it would not exist, that its life would only begin when it appeared and last only as long as it stayed there. It will not be long before an analogous work emerges, and when it does so, so will its human partner. Her name will be Mary, as in the Virgin Mary, Caterina, Leonardo's mother. These are all figures I talk about in the part I left out, or Eurydice. Her name will be Mary Caterina or Eurydice. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, Chris. and Brooke second. We can turn that off.
Inaudible.
Yeah, that's a really great question. Well, Coleman did another work that I wrote about. The title of the work is a quote from him, Live Vocals. And he plays with notions of playback He reimagines liveness there also in digital terms. So he's really upending orthodoxy around the digital, instead of seeing it as yet more removed from the real than, let's say, a photograph, but it's a representation of a representation that we're getting farther and farther away from liveness. He is reimagining what liveness itself means. So he's doing it slightly differently in these two works, but here the process of creating the image is live, and it does not live till it appears, and it dies. It dies when it disappears. It ceases to exist. And so it's a total reimagination of what it means for something to be alive. And in all of his works, this notion of rhyming, versification, correspondence, it's constantly coming back to that as the agency of animation. So it's a kind of very novel approach to images because of his commitment to this notion of correspondences and his repudiation of the logic of representation, in effect. I think I said Brooke was...
inaudible.
Yeah. So Paul Valéry, in his wonderful essays, is enthralled with Leonardo for this reason, as is Merleau-Ponty. Many subsequent artists who are in this trajectory that I'm talking about invoke Leonardo as he's the touchstone, in effect, for them. And Valéry has this fantastic passage, which this is a chapter of a book of mine, by the way, which is called Flesh of My Flesh. So this kind of connectedness is something that I'm making big claims for, claims that go far beyond Leonardo. But at any rate, Valéry says, this rhymes with this, rhymes with this. He's talking about the contents of a room, the table with the chair and the chair with the lamp. I mean, I'm just sort of making this up. And he says, and if we could speed this process up of analogizing, everything would be changed, as a kind of process of radical transformation. And the most beautiful book that's been written about Leonardo by the late lamented Arras, French scholar, French art historian, not only talks about analogy throughout the whole book, but he talks about the way Leonardo dynamizes analogy. So in his later work, I didn't show you some of the drawings that speak to this kind of volatilization, but it's analogy and movement. It's not just analogy of stable forms, but it begins to be echoing at the level of movement as well. If you really stop to think about it, as I obviously have, I would say that the English Romantics are in this tradition, that Baudelaire, Gerhard Richter massively, Jean-Luc Godard, obviously Paul Valéry and Merleau-Ponty, and Sebald, the novelist Sebald, is also obsessed with this. There is a pretty fantastic group of people. It's sort of where I would want to be. I mean, it's the modernity that I would want, the people I would most want to associate myself with. And yeah, the idea that representation is something that is of human construction and that it is separate from the real is, of course, the place that modernity, where Descartes took us. If we see Descartes not so much as the one who did it, but as the emblematic figure in that moment, that's all about separation and difference, and that's what Foucault talks about, the sudden loss of similitude as the organizing principle and the marching off in the direction of difference. which is, in my view, is helps to explain a lot where we are in the world at this moment in time. So there's a very big political project for me in recovering that kind of relationality and in rethinking similarity. And Coleman also, of course, the date of summer of 2003, I mean, this was a moment in which he was wanting to make an intervention around the Iraq War, too. So he was foregrounding the centrality of finitude within Leonardo's work. Leonardo accompanied hanged people to their, I mean, people who were hanged to the execution site in a kind of spirit of comradeship. They donated their bodies to him. He anatomized them. He had an astonishing relationship to mortality. I left that out of the part that I talk about, but and there's some beautiful passages on that in his notebooks. Marty.